You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. For months now, a serious outbreak of Ebola has been spreading through Africa, claiming thousands of lives and endangering many more. While the U.S. has been monitoring the situation and offering some aid, it wasn't until this week that the president committed 3,000 troops and $500 million to combat the spread of the disease, a sign that the country is going all in to try to stop the disease's spread. Our next guest says the slow response to the Ebola crisis raises some serious questions about the United States' ability to deal with a pandemic or bioterror, and says the country needs to rethink its strategy for preparedness and adopt a more modern approach for dealing with future outbreaks which could be looming. Joining us now is Tevye Troy. He's the president of the American Health Policy Institute and a former deputy secretary of Health and Human Services. He recently co-wrote an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal called Ebola's Warning for an Unprepared America. Tevye, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So this week, the president committed some serious resources to the fight against Ebola. And this is an outbreak that's been going on for months. Why did the president wait until now to dig in?
Well, that's an excellent question. And in fact, you mentioned the piece I had today in the Wall Street Journal. I had a piece a few weeks ago, also with Scott Gottlieb, who's a former deputy commissioner at FDA, where we said that the U.S. needed to step up its effort to fight against Ebola. And I think over the last few weeks, I would say since Labor Day, there's been a bit of a groundswell of urging people to get more involved because this thing was threatening to spiral out of control. I mean, once the number of deaths went over 1,000, now it's over 2,400, there were projections showing that 20,000 people could be affected, and at the current death rates, that could be 10,000 deaths. So there was a sense that this thing was not only getting out of control, but that the local authorities were losing the ability and lacked the capacity to handle it.
Can you put this into context for us? How bad is this Ebola outbreak so far?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there's something like, I believe, 250,000 people die in Africa from malaria every year. So the number of deaths at this point is not catastrophic, but it is a contagious disease. It's not airborne. It spreads through bodily fluids. And it has the capacity to significantly threaten the African countries. In fact, the defense minister of Liberia saw this as an existential threat, a serious existential threat to his country. So existential threats don't come around that often. So that is a problem. It can devastate these nations economically from a health perspective. And as we all know, that turmoil leads to problems in the world beyond just the borders that are in trouble. And it could lead to social unrest, but also political and economic upheaval. And we don't need more of that in the world right now.
You know, I can remember back to the 90s when Ebola first sort of hit public consciousness, at least in America, and there were flare-ups and people were horrified about the disease here and what the symptoms were. And then it was stamped out. It was contained. And I wonder if the response this time has anything to do with what happened in the 90s, that we're used to seeing it now. We were a little desensitized and the danger passed last time, so surely it would pass this time.
Well, I would say that the flare-up in the 1990s, or at least the concern of the public consciousness that you refer to, was due more to the Richard Preston book, The Hot Zone,
right,
than it was to the actual spread and the danger of the disease spreading in the U.S. at the time. That book assumed that it was used as a bioweapon, so Ebola was weaponized, and it so frightened Bill Clinton when he read it that he gave it to Newt Gingrich to read as well, and to start America to take these questions of pandemic spread and also bioweapons more seriously. You know, even though Gingrich and Clinton were ideological adversaries, they worked together far more often than people realize, and they also work together far more often than our congressional leaders of today, who are of opposing parties, do. So, and they're both big readers, both Clinton and Gingrich. So they had that in common. So I think there was a popular culture fear of Ebola. Obviously, it is a devastating disease, and there is no cure and there is no vaccine for it at this time. There are treatments. You can be treated. It's not an automatic death sentence if you get it, but the rates of death are pretty high, especially if you don't get proper treatment, and that's happening all too often in Africa. But I think I agree with your larger point that the diseases reach social consciousness because there's a flare-up, there's media attention paid to them, and then they go away. So, for example, in 2000, NIH announced that it had a workable vaccine for monkeys with Ebola, which is often a precursor step to getting this vaccine with humans. Well, when this Ebola crisis broke out now, 14 years later, there's still no available vaccine for humans. So
right. Where's the vaccine? What happened?
Right. That's it. I think the public lost attention, stopped paying attention, or the public stops paying attention. Congress doesn't pay attention. They don't appropriate the funds. And I was talking to a senior health official this week who said what we had it was a policy to get this vaccine, but it wasn't a priority. And if something's not a priority, it doesn't necessarily happen.
Well, so Bill Clinton was interested in preventing bioterror pandemic, you know, with Ebola in the 90s. So one would hope that there would be preparedness steps taken in the interim, maybe specific to that disease. Where are we today? How prepared are we for a pandemic or an act of bioterror?
Yeah, that is a good question. We are in much, much better shape now than we were 18 years ago when Bill Clinton was reading that book, or even in the early 2000s when George W. Bush read the book, The Great Influenza, about the 1918 Spanish flu, and that spurred him to action to create a flu plan for the U.S. And we've made a lot of strides since then. We've improved our detection methods. We've accelerated the process for getting vaccines together. We do have plans in place with better command and control. But I think what this Ebola outbreak suggests now is that we need this strategy 2.0. We need the next version of the strategy because it's not quite good enough. We've made a lot of progress in terms of technology for detection and surveillance, and we haven't necessarily adapted them to government uses, and it's not in widespread use among the different government agencies that don't often connect or contact each other or communicate with each other enough. I think we need to do a better job at development of countermeasures, as my story about the NIH having some form of vaccine for monkeys 14 years ago, indicates. I think that we have something called Project BioShield that started in the Bush administration. It's a congressionally passed program to develop new countermeasures. It's made some progress, and we do have a strategic national stockpile where we do stockpile some countermeasures, but it's not enough, and it does not do a good enough job at finding countermeasures that aren't being developed by the private sector and getting those made and getting those developed in stockpiles.
Well, for health companies,
so we've made progress, but not enough.
Gotcha. Well, for health companies, other than curing a really bad disease and you know, being known for that, are there incentives in place when you consider that you know the small number of cases might be relatively low? You know, it's not going to be like, say, inventing Viagra.
Yeah, well, it is true that there's kind of a blockbuster desire among many biotech companies and pharm companies. But these drugs serve an important purpose, and there is some economic value to the companies for developing them, especially if they get stockpiled. That means the U.S. government will regularly purchase this, and when the stocks run out or expire, they repurchase them, and then they restock up in the strategic national stockpile. But apparently the incentive structure that we have under Project BioShield is not enough. In the piece we have in the Wall Street Journal today, Scott and I call for more of a prize rather than a grant mentality. We try and incentivize companies to come up with the solution to vexing public health problems, and if they do that, they would get some kind of prize that would not only pay for their research but would give them a profit to boot. So I think we need to rethink the incentive structure that we have in Project BioShield, which has done a lot of good work, but I think we need to increase its effectiveness going forward.
One of the things that you say went wrong so far with the current Ebola outbreak is that there was a misfire in gauging the true scope of the outbreak. What do you think went wrong there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, part of it is out of mind, Americans don't pay that much attention to what's going on in Western Africa. But part of it is I think the World Health Organization didn't really have its eye on the ball. I think they could have paid closer attention to it. We make a point in the article that the World Health Organization said its grave concern this summer was electronic cigarettes. It seems to me Ebola is a bigger worry than that. So I think the World Health Organization could have done more, but also the World Health Organization makes the point that it doesn't have the resources or the capacity to do this kind of thing. It's more of a consulting organization. It doesn't have the ability to tell countries, do this, do that, quarantine, isolate, whatever has to be done. So maybe we do need another kind of body. I'm not one who generally wants to give more responsibilities to the United Nations, but maybe it would be a better job for the United Nations to develop some kind of public health capacity that could work in this regard rather than another vote condemning Israel, let's say.
We're talking right now with Tevi Troy about the Ebola outbreak in Africa and what the United States can learn about better preparing for pandemics in the future. You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think the United States is prepared to fight a pandemic within its own borders? Is there anything you'd like to see change in order for us to be better prepared? And what questions do you have about Ebola and that outbreak today? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll pick up our conversation right after a look at the latest news. I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking with Tevi Troy about the Ebola crisis in Africa and what lessons the United States can learn about dealing with future outbreaks around the world and inside our borders. You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you think the United States is prepared to fight a pandemic within its own borders? Is there anything you'd like to see change in order for us to be better prepared? And what questions do you have? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And I want to talk about the WHO. Now, you take issue with them in your piece. You're questioning whether this is actually the right group to be dealing with pandemics and outbreaks. Why?
Well, I'd like them to be the right organization. It makes sense that you would have a World Health Organization handling these kinds of things, but it seems to me that their focus is not on this kind of disease prevention. They claim they don't have the resources to deal with it. Maybe they're right. They don't have the ability to direct to countries what to do, which I think seems like it would be something that needs to be done, although I recognize that a lot of countries don't want some outside health organization telling them what to do. And I think there's some weakness on the surveillance front. I noted in the piece that there was a lag in 2009 when the H1N1, known as swine flu, emerged in Mexico, and there were a number of signals and some private sector groups that picked up on the problem, and some of the international health organizations, including PAHO, which is the Pan American Health Organization, and the WHO and the Mexican government, didn't realize what was happening for about 2 weeks after other people and other signals had indicated that there was a problem. So I think they need to be faster. I think they need to have more of a focus on this stopping international disease spread, and I think they need to perhaps have more resources dedicated to it.
And you point out also that little outbreaks can seem like blips on the radar, but if they're clustered and they're persistent, they can signal a bigger outbreak. And this is something maybe that could be detectable just by using Google and getting alerts about unusual searches and things like that. Is the WHO, do you think, more geared toward policy than pandemic?
That's what it appears to be to me. I mean, I don't think they're the most open organization, so it's always hard to tell what's going on in there. But I think this gets to your earlier question about things going off the public radar screen, but that doesn't mean they necessarily go away. These micro outbreaks might take place months before a larger outbreak, and the larger community, certainly the public at large, doesn't realize that there's a problem, but you should have public health officials who are aware of this and this tendency of the micro-outbreaks to lead to bigger and worse outbreaks down the road.
Is part of this that we haven't had the case, the American people haven't had the case put to them that Ebola should be cared about and should be acted upon as a country, and there needs to be maybe more of a public face to make people aware of things, to bring it into the consciousness. If there's not a best-selling book like The Hot Zone, somebody else needs to be doing the talking.
Yeah, I mean, part of the problem is that there's a mixed message coming from the administration, and I don't disagree with either side of the message. I mean, on the one hand, the administration doesn't want to panic here, and I think an important part of public health officials is not to induce panic. And they're saying that Ebola, as it's currently configured, is unlikely to spread in the U.S. That's true. At the same time, President Obama is saying that the Ebola is a crisis and needs to be dealt with. And it's hard for people to come to grips with the sense that it's a big crisis, but it's also not really going to affect me or my family or bother us here. And so how to message that is a challenge, and I recognize that it's a problem, and it leads to some of these issues that you're talking about, how maybe the American people aren't primed to worry about it. And then the other thing is that Lord knows there's all sorts of other apparent crises going on in the world, and over the last decade or so we've seen such a collection of crises like we've never seen before, including an economic collapse. We had swine flu and SARS, which were not as devastating as they could have been, but they were problematic. We had 9/11. We've got ISIS with the beheadings. So it seems like there are so many more disasters than ever before. In fact, I'm working on a book on this right now, on presidents and disasters, how presidents throughout history have dealt with disasters and what we should do about them in the future.
I want to look back at that vaccine you mentioned. In the year 2000, you said the NIH announced that there was a vaccine that prevented Ebola in primates. So what happened with that? Is someone picking up on that thread now?
Now you do see some companies that are working on towards a vaccine. I know GlaxoSmithKline has been making some progress towards a vaccine, and I think there's a good chance we will see a vaccine that's available for humans in a relatively short time frame. However, this is after the outbreak has already been pretty devastating in Africa and threatens these countries' health, their economies, and their social structures. So it would have been great if we had this vaccine at some stage in 2000 and we'd accelerated the development in the intervening 14 years.
What do you think it's going to take to get the ball rolling on changes like the ones you suggest?
I'm sorry, on what? Like the thing
changes, the policy changes, the changes, way we handle pandemics, yeah. That sort of thing.
Well, look, I mean, what can you do but get out there and express your voice and say, I think these are the problems that we face. In the Wall Street Journal op-ed that Scott and I did today, we hone in on three specific direct areas that the U.S. needs to improve. One is detection and surveillance. Another is the development of countermeasures, which we talked about. And a third, and an important one, is the logistical challenge. There was recently a report from the Department of Homeland Security's Inspector General that says that the Homeland Security Department is undersupplied and has not done a basic needs assessment of what kind of logistics they need in case of a pandemic in the U.S., and basically that the U.S. Department of Homeland Security is not ready for a pandemic at home. That is a real problem and a real worry. Another question that we raise in the article is this question of who's in charge. You have Department of Health and Human Services, where I served, which has the technical expertise to deal with these kinds of things. You have a lot of doctors there, public health experts. And then you have departments like Homeland Security and Defense, which have the assets, the ability to move large people, the trucks and the helicopters to take people from one place to another, the field hospitals that can be set up at relatively short notice. And so if a disaster, if a pandemic strikes in the U.S., who is really in charge? And when I served in government, I was both at the White House and at HHS, and this was a constant tension. Is a pandemic outbreak in the U.S. a Homeland Security issue, or is it a Health and Human Services issue? You know, you could say both, and that's true, but if the president has to make one phone call, he's not going to call two secretaries. He's got to call one.
Is there too much bureaucracy standing in the way of response when you look at multiple agencies being involved in something like this?
Well, it's a double-edged sword. So on the one hand, you could say there's too much bureaucracy, but on the other hand, every time there's a crisis or a problem, what does government do and what does Congress do? Say, hey, we need someone directed to address this issue and to be an expert on this issue and to be ready should something pop up. So that leads to another office, and the people who had the office need to be staffed. And so that does lead to another bureaucratic layer. But on the other hand, you don't want to be without the person who's expert in, let's say, Ebola or in flu if it should happen. So it's a challenge to figure out how to deal with that. My friend John DiIulio, who worked in the White House in the early Bush administration, just wrote a book called Bureaucracy, which I have on my shelf and about to read. It's about how we have so many programs and so much federal funding, and we may not have enough federal civil servants to deal with the problems we face, and that the percentage of people who the percentage of workers compared to the amount of money we spend in the federal government has been going down. We don't have enough people to do the work that has to be done. I'm not sure I'm completely convinced by the argument, but he's a smart guy, and it's worth thinking about.
Tevye, thank you so much for being here today.
It was really great, Veronica. Thank you.
Tevye Troy is the president of the American Health Policy Institute and a former deputy secretary of Health and Human Services. We've got a link to his recent opinion piece called Ebola's Warning for an Unprepared America on the Central Time Facebook page. He's also working on a book on presidents and disasters.